Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Weekender on this Easter weekend. Yes, we are open all hours on the Sports Weekender, so no holiday weekend takes me away from being on the old radio and providing the best show we can. Just before we get to our next guest, a big shout out to Father Ted's Original Irish Pub. They're based at 1 Wellesley Street West in the Auckland Central Business District, opposite the iconic Civic Theatre, which is full of roadworks, as we all know. They have the best of local craft and international draft beers on taps. They have a selection of bottle beers, fine wines, good spirits, great food, music, Wednesday through to Sunday. So make Father Ted's your location to go to. Their number is 09377 3142, or you can email them fatherteds@hotmail.com. Wow, it's been a nice relaxing weekend. Caught up with a lot of people, and of course AJ's away this weekend. He's having a bit of on holiday, probably talking to people, probably talking about himself. Instead, we have a very good replacement. He is an award-winning journalist, author, and he works for One News. His name is Patrick McKendry. He's an old schoolmate of mine from St Thomas's. So, very good morning to you, Patrick. How you going, mate?
Morning, Eamon. Very good, thank you.
And thank you for standing in at the last minute. And it's going to be good to speak to someone that's not going to give me stick like that damn AJ Whitten. But enough of that. Let's get into it. Crusader 69, Fijian Drua 26. It's saying goodbye to Apollo Stadium, and they said goodbye in a fantastic fashion. Cody Taylor, 150 Super Rugby games, 50 plus tries now, and 4 tries for the night. Really the star of the show. Johnny Lee, really impressed with him. I think this guy's got a real good future. Jamie Hannell was excellent, but I have to say, really, it lost the structure in the last 10 to 15 minutes. Always was with substitutions, but just your thoughts on that game, Patrick.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of threads to it, isn't there? The final game at the Crusaders' temporary stadium, in quotation marks, you know, thrown up in 100 days in 2012 after those devastating earthquakes in Christchurch. It's a funny little place, Eamon. One of the coldest sporting arenas in the Southern Hemisphere, I think. And interesting, I saw that they actually used some of the light towers from Carisbrook, the old King Commission Carisbrook in Dunedin, to shed light on the stadium. And probably appropriate, really, because it was a very cold, windy place, Apollo Stadium. So anyway, a lot of people will be looking forward to the new Te Kaha Stadium, which in the centre of the city, it's going to be incredible. And that obviously that opens with the Super Round over Anzac weekend. So looking forward to that. I'm actually going to go down and have a look. So,
oh, great.
It'll be pretty emotional, you know, for a lot of Cantabrians. I think to sort of see the rugby circle come full circle and complete, if you like, because, you know, I think it's another symbol of the, you know, the rehabilitation or the restructuring of the city after those earthquakes. So it's a very long answer to say not much, apart from the fact that it was a significant night last night, and obviously a significant win for the Crusaders, who are up to fourth on the table now.
Yeah, and when we look at Apollo Project Stadiums, after those devastating earthquakes, there were so many people displaced, some still not placed, but we looked at it, Crusaders Rugby and Canterbury Rugby was displaced at that stage. What Apollo Project Stadium was that solid old brick and tile house. Needs a bit of work, but now we're moving to the mansion. But the brick and tile house will hold memories, and will hold a lot of good memories, not only for the people of Christchurch, but the Crusaders. And, you know, I looked at that game and I felt, you know, it's a good way to say goodbye. I really felt, you know, when they opened this new stadium, that, you know, that the memories that this stadium shouldn't be forgotten for its contribution, not only to Crusaders Rugby, but to the city of Christchurch. It was needed at a time. when it was needed. Yeah. And it was a shame that, you know, obviously what we saw, the respect shown to Cody Taylor, you know, he just proves what a fantastic player he is and what a great ambassador he is, not only for Crusaders rugby, but for New Zealand rugby.
Correct. Yeah, well said. And, you know, he has known no other home as a Crusader during his career. And he actually made his All Blacks debut on that field as well. So really pleased for Cody to, you know, to celebrate his 150th game for the Crusaders with four tries in 50 minutes, I think. Quite extraordinary, really. And what a great player he has been, both for the All Blacks and the Crusaders. One of the most consistent going around. He's worked on his game. He's probably one of the fittest and most committed forwards in the All Blacks over the years, and he's sort of constantly reinvented himself too. So yeah, really pleased for Cody.
Just one thing, and when we just as we touch ending on the Apollo project's ending, it would have been nice to send the guy that really brought Crusaders rugby together. I know he was, in the last few months, he's been, you know, he was maligned when he was the All Blacks coach, but I felt Scott Robinson, you know, I feel if they're going to honour some of the great coaches, he should be one of the first ones on the list.
That's a good point. You know, obviously won seven in a row, turned them around really after a bit of a drought for the Crusaders in terms of championships. It'll be interesting how they treat that. I don't think Scott Robertson, he's probably not sort of really eager to put himself out there after the All Blacks disappointment, but he should be recognised, and others should be recognised too, I think, like Todd Blackadder, who you know, held that group together in 2011, you know, spent the entire season on the road, went to far-flung places as far as London and South Africa, and you know, they really carried a city and a region on their shoulders, and unfortunately for them, the final hurdle in Brisbane against the Reds in the final was too high for them. But I think all of those coaches and Robbie Deans too should be fully recognised.
Absolutely. Anyway, we move on. The big one, of course, there, the Chiefs have the Waratahs, the return of Tupu Vai. I have to say, this one is so crucial to the Chiefs, because at times they've been stuttering a bit in Super Rugby Pacific. Tupu Vai is going to be fantastic. The Waratahs, a guy I like seeing is Jorgensen on the wing. I think this guy is just class.
Yeah, an excitement machine, isn't he? Does the basics so well, but he's got real X factor as well. Look, I really don't know about the Chiefs this season, Amon. I just can't work them out. They can look so dominant and good, and yet they have these mental glitches where they concede points so quickly. Just remembering back to when the Crusaders beat them in Hamilton this season, and the Brumbies in Canberra as well. They were, you know, they had really commanding leads in both of those games, and they lost games that really they shouldn't have because of some really basic defensive errors and as I say, mental lapses. So can't quite work them out. Jono Gibbs, new coach, obviously, this season. You know, perhaps he's got a bit of things around the mental side of the game for the Chiefs, but you know, as you say, tonight's game really crucial, and you can't. I see on the TAB that the Chiefs are hot favourites, but you just cannot count the Waratahs out.
You know what? If you do that at your peril, because I believe Australian rugby has improved in the last season. It began to improve. This season, I think the Australians, you know, and probably for the first time in a long time, are probably a genuine threat when it comes to this competition.
Oh, yeah, they really are. I think the standard's risen across the board over the Tasman. And so you sort of need to treat those Aussie teams with a bit more respect than perhaps we should have, than perhaps we have in the recent past. And, you know, their record in New Zealand's improving a bit too. So just remembering back to when they beat the Brumbies beat the Crusaders, didn't they? So, and smashed a long drought in Christchurch. So, yeah, definitely they're on the up.
And of course, then we go to Australia next, the Reds versus the Force. The Force have really been a nearly team, but the Reds, they're beginning to, you know, you look at that, you look at Wilson, McWright, Nasser, you look at that combination of loose forwards, they really probably are one of the best loose forward combinations going on in the competition. You know, to me, the Reds come in as big favourites. Les Kiss, who will, after this, takes over the Wallaby duties. You couldn't go anywhere not past the Reds on this one.
Yeah, I think so. As you say, they're lethal to break down those guys. And Stan Vern from the Blues, obviously, he's taking over next season. So that'll be interesting. But just to point on, you know, the fixtures this weekend, Amon, I see that NRL have, you know, again, completely owned the long Easter weekend.
Of course, they always do.
Well, there's three Super Rugby games this weekend, and none of them feature, like the Hurricanes, top of the table, not featuring. The Blues, second, not featuring this weekend. I think it's a real lost opportunity for Super Rugby to maintain a grip on Easter, if you like, and not give away such precious real estate to the NRL.
Well, there's another thing I'm going to raise here, is that, you know, we've changed, there's been a few laws changed as of yesterday. You can go and have a beer in a pub and not feel like you're breaking the laws or having to go to confession the next day. But the other thing too is like, what I would like to see, because Easter is a big holiday, people go away, is actually taking some of those games to, like, the Chiefs, they get, you know, what would have cost them to take that game to, say, Tauranga?
Mm. Yeah, well, it probably would be an opportunity cost, to be fair, because of probably crowd numbers and...
I think they'll get a bigger crowd. I believe they'll get a bigger crowd in Tauranga than they would in, say, Hamilton. Because most people are away. Well, it might be changed now, obviously, because we've got a small fuel crisis going on, Patrick. But to me, this is where rugby gets it wrong. And I have to be honest with you. And the competition organisers, like what you said, NRL. I was able to flick between channels watching games of rugby league, two games of rugby league, one watching the Crusaders, flicking around the channels, and then I'm looking at Saturday. It's absolutely buzzing. They've dominated the whole weekend. This is where I think the organisers of this competition, they need to either work with the NRL, which I can never see it happening, or else we've got to change things. We've got to change things up, hype it up a bit.
Yeah, agree. Yeah, it's I've got to take a bigger picture view of the season and identify big opportunities where people, you know, perhaps they have a bit more time to sit down and watch a game, and I certainly think Easter is one of those.
I think it is too, and I think, and actually bringing it to some of the more holiday areas would be fantastic, because it would be give something for something to do on an Easter break. Hey, I was reading a very interesting article. Georgina Ponsonby's been signed a temporary New Zealand contract as she's playing for Ealing in the English Women's Premier competition, but seeing this here, I believe that we, especially for women's rugby, where the competition is so much better in Europe, and it's so much, there are better opportunities financially. Now, New Zealand rugby and the men's game have been adamant on that, no, we're not picking it from overseas, but I think there's been an exemption made on this, and I really feel the way the women's game is probably where the men will be heading after this World Cup. And I think, in fairness, she's got to come back and play some domestic rugby, but, you know, at some point, the black fans could be one of the first that will be picking from overseas.
Mm. Well, as you say, it's probably a thin end of the wedge, isn't it? And I certainly think it's only a matter of time before that happens with the All Blacks too. You know, it would be cheaper for New Zealand rugby to allow an overseas club to, you know, potentially pay the bulk of an All Black salary. But beyond that as well, you look at the way the Springboks do it, and so many South Africans playing in clubs around the world, all over the world, and they come back and they share those ideas with South Africa rugby, with the Springboks, and they just seem to be better for it. And I think if one thing is missing at the moment from New Zealand rugby, it's innovation. And, you know, that's part of the reason why I'm quite excited about this new coaching team. And the All Blacks coaching team, they just seem to be a little bit more open to ideas from the outside, including Mike Blair, the Scottish, you know, the former Scotland Test halfback who's coming in to take over the All Blacks attack under Dave Rennie. I just think that that's a really good move. And I think, you know, it could be a small step towards increasing New Zealand's innovation in the game, and that's something we've lost over the years.
You know, well, I think if you've got if you need the top coach and he's from overseas, why not give him an opportunity to be part of this? I know for a fact, and the rumours did swirl, and I heard it. I know some people, never really got verified if Scott Robinson had stayed on. There was a potential that someone like a Ronan O'Gara would come into the All Blacks setup. Now, to me, I don't have a problem. And I think we've grown up in this country, and we've also realised having that overseas experience is actually helping New Zealand rugby. And the simple reason is that European rugby in itself has actually got better. So we need to use the IP from them to improve our game.
Yeah, I mean, just look at the recent Six Nations. What
brilliant
a
competition. That was brilliant, yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah. Now, if you'd said that to me 20 years ago, I would have said, God, I need a cure for insomnia. Let's watch the Six Nations. But now, it far out, and I've been very open on this, it far outshines our rugby championship at the moment. And in fact, and then the Nations Cup, when it starts, you know, I hope that France send out their best side. I can't see it.
No, probably not.
You know, they beat to their own drum. Patrick, what's the plans for the weekend, mate?
Well, I took in some club rugby yesterday down at North Shore, which is very enjoyable. Apart from that, just a bit of admin around the house, and we're off on an overseas trip actually on Monday. So,
where are you heading to, Pat?
We're going to Vietnam as a family, which would be nice.
So, great.
I just hope the plane has enough fuel to get us there and back, and it'll be all good.
No, that's okay, mate. I hope it does well. We've got a problem with this fuel crisis. Anyway, Patrick, thank you so much for your time, and we will catch up very, very soon at some point. And I need to take you to one of the sponsors. I need to take you there,
sounds
Patrick,
good,
because
look forward to it.
Yeah, well, just to let you know that the rumours about me being being tied are absolutely untrue, so we'll leave it at that. Okay, have a good weekend, and enjoy your holiday, mate. Patrick McKendry. So next up, we're going to have a quick chat to Stephen Harris, and then we'll talk a bit of club stuff. And it's been, and as you might be aware, there was a bit of club stuff across the region, so let's play some music.
I can tell by the look in your eyes that the storm's coming back again. I can hear in the sound of your voice that you're starting to crack. After all of this time, I'd be lying if I said that I knew how to do it just right. 'Cause the truth is I lose it sometimes, and I need you standing there to remind me that I should say goodbye. All the clouds in my mind. Oh, I know it's been a bumpy road. Keep thinking there's so far to go. But take a look around, it's amazing. If we made it here, then we made it. No better place I'd rather be. All of my people here with me. Never took the time to celebrate it. But if we made it here, then we made it. Oh.
Oh, well, played a bit of music. Hopefully, Spotify, you do not bump me. Anyway, when I say that, it means I won't get bumped. Anyway, we'll talk about a club rugby, regional rugby rap. And this is brought to you by Force Electrical. Force Electrical was started in 2014 by Nick Brakovich and has grown to be a trusted name across the wider region. Why you should choose them? Well, first of all, reliability and knowledge that sets them apart. They stay ahead of the latest industry standards and technology. What they do? Well, no job too big, no job too small. They cover residential and commercial projects. Ongoing electrical maintenance, solar panel systems with inverters and battery storage and ELV solutions. So give Force Electrical a call. Their number is 021-628-341. Or you can email nick@forceelectrical.co.nz. Well, we've had a bit of club rugby over the weekend, and here to join us, my good friend, a wonderful man, Stephen Harris. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Amon. Always a privilege and a pleasure. Never a chore, buddy.
That's going to be the new slogan. Always a privilege. That's the slogan now. That's it, mate. Hey, I tell you what, there has been, over this Easter weekend, while there's not much super rugby, there's a lot of club rugby happening. And, of course, Northland. Wow. They've had a full round of Northland rugby, obviously, on Thursday night. And we'll just run through the results there. OBM, Old Boys Marist 5, Carmo 27.
Yep, that's a bit of a turn up that one. OBM playing at home at the Northland HP headquarters, and that was a real surprise, and it just shows you Carmo travelling quite well at the moment. So well done to them.
And of course, then we had Western Sharks 13, Horror Horror 22. A bit of an upset there.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, if you recall, Horror started the season quite poorly. They were missing players, but now that they're starting to get their players back, doing really, really well. Apparently, outstanding performance by the younger brother of Cole Forbes, who's in the Blues, his younger brother Grady Forbes, who has moved up from the Bay of Plenty to try and crack the Northland Taniwha squad, making every post a winner. And from what I believe, he's been pulled into the HP camp. So well done to Grady, and also well done to Horror.
And of course, in a bit of a local derby, Welshford 48, Omatea Hawks 0. Now, I have to say that them two were basically merged for a small while, but a big win for Welshford.
Yeah, very, very much, so. Listen, that was one of those marriages right up there with probably
I was going to say Prince Charles and Lady Di.
yeah, pretty much that as well. Yeah, it was probably never going to work, but no question, Welshford is still the stronger club, and Otamatea, it's their first season back in the big league for boy over a decade, so they're struggling a little bit, and it might take a year or two just to basically right itself and get these players used to this level of rugby.
Now in the final game, Hikarangi 19, Mid Northern 38. Now Hikarangi must have put up a hell of a good performance against a very good Mid Northern side.
Yeah, well, we all have smiles on our faces, but once again, this is a case of the rugby app letting us down a little bit, Amon, and that's not the correct score. In fact, it blew out to 64.
Oh, my God.
In the end, so Mid-Northern keeping their average of...
Never trust Tribe.
Exactly, of 70 points, and that final score was 64-19. Yeah, but I mean to say, that Mid-Northern side, like I've said before, they have a lot of guys that are in the academy in that side, and with Eric Rush cracking the whip, you know they will be fit. And boy, they also have the luxury of, they've got some super players running around as well. I think Chris Arpoa and also Alan Craig, who are with Moana, they can call on those guys once the season's over, but also the Rush brothers as well. So they're basically doing the business without all those players as well. And just one game we might have just quick missed, and probably more another local derby, was Kerikeri and the United Kalakaua Moirua. From what I understand, Kerikeri, after getting out to a lead, had to hang on for dear life. So, mate, after three rounds, Mid-Northern, the only unbeaten side, and they it's almost a case of give them the title now, but you and I both know club titles aren't won in April.
Yeah, absolutely. So we go to and just down the motorway a bit to North Harbour. This game was played on Wednesday and apparently a hell of a good game. I know someone who was out there. And it was QMU 23, Northcote 31, but from all accounts, a very good game.
Yeah, no, great to see QMU being very, very competitive. I'm not sure if Northcote are the same team that we've seen in recent seasons. Of course, they took an almighty hiding the other week, I believe, when they travelled over to North Shore. So, yeah, they're probably just finding their feet as well.
Anyway, we move on to yesterday's games, and, of course, this one came through, and I was obviously... North Shore won by default against Maharangi, which is concerning. This is concerning at this early part of the season. I know it's Easter. People are probably away or has the fuel crisis hit. Who knows? And, of course, then on the other ones, Takapuna 28, Helensville 17. Now, Helensville must have put up a bit of a fight there.
Absolutely. I was at the Massey Silverdale game and I was just checking the score lines and I thought, well, maybe this is a case of the app playing up, but possibly not. 28-17, that's a hell of an effort from Helensville. And boy, it just shows you, you know, you think back to a couple of years ago when they came into this competition, they took some almighty cap originally, but, you know, you can just see the fruits of the labour. I know Dean Phillips does a wonderful job up there in Helensville, and you know, he must have a bit of a smile on his face at the minute.
Absolutely. And of course, the big result, Massey really proving that they could be the team to watch and probably break that stranglehold of North Shore, had a 62-15 win over Silverdale.
Yep. Oh, very, very much so. Far too strong. Listen, so I was at that game. I basically drove across town from the Grammar Tech Rifles game and shot out and watched just to check on these North Harbour sides. And boy, Silverdale, credit, they got out of the block, scored the first try, looked really, really good. But gee, once that Massey team rolled their sleeves up, they were just basically hard to stop. Cole Benson at first five running the cutter really well, and I think Lua Latu, the hooker, charged around, got three tries, and Augustine Salanoa, who I believe is also in Moana, came off the bench as well. So it just gives you a bit of an idea in terms of what sort of depth they have got. A couple of ex-Ponsonby players there as well.
And a couple of ex-Eden players too.
The number eight, Sam Howling. So there you go. So they've recruited pretty well. caught up with Matt Howling yesterday, and he's just hoping that they can go one better this year. But not Silverdale's day. The longer the game got, their scrum was totally under pressure at times. They're plucky. They'll have their share of wins this year, but they look a pretty young side. So Rob Coughlin and Sam Ward, next Grammar Tech coach, and of course North Harbour coach, got a bit of a job in front of them.
And of course then then we go to Canning's Manukau. Well, this was played the other night. Papakura 5, Ardmore Mara 74, Mangarewa 80, Weymouth 6. Now this, and then Pukekohe 41, Bombay 8, and in the game of the round, and it's Karaka 21, Padamahoe 19.
Well, there's always been a trainer's thought that maybe Pakuranga and some of those Southside clubs should be playing in the County of Manukau competition, but not this year, brother. Not this year.
No. Oh, by the way, to all my friends at Pakuranga, I'm not apologising.
No, of course he's not. interesting. So, yeah, a couple of interesting, but predominantly just probably the closest game, and we expected that Karaka Patamahoe 21-19. You'll probably see score lines from these two teams throughout the year when they meet again. Obviously, home ground advantage played its part. Pukekohe, yes, far too strong for Bombay at the end of the day, and probably no surprise with the other two results, although that I think both Papakura and Weymouth would be really pleased that they didn't concede over 100 points on this occasion.
Well, you know, they declared for bad light. I shouldn't say that. That's terrible. Anyway, you went across. This was played yesterday. Grammar Tech 19, College Rifles 55 in the ARU Championship semi-finals. Bit of a shock. That's a bit of a turn-up. College Rifles look good, do they, Stephen?
Very much so, but I did catch up with sort of coaching Grammar Tech this year, Matt Moles. We've also got I think one of Richie Harris's sons also coaching as well. And Essie Tuanga Fussy, I do apologise, I've just forgotten the young fella's name, Richie's son's name. But talking to Matt Moles, former Northland hooker, at the beginning of the match, they had quite a few unavailable on this long weekend, so they rolled out quite a few development players. On saying that, they still had a reasonable side on the paddock, but College Rifles, the game pretty much started. I mean, Grammar Tech, I think, scored first, but College Rifles, once they got their game going, they were lethal. Ken Mixell in the midfield, he's also a goal kicker as well. I think he racked up quite a few points, but the kid that really stood out for me was Jacob McKinnon, the fullback from Glendowie College. Wow. Mm-hmm. This kid is definitely special. He's got the full array of skills. I think he just missed out on New Zealand 20s, but he's in that like travelling squad. And they also had a New Zealand 20s hooker who came on in the second half. First name Xavier. People in the Auckland region will probably know who I'm actually talking about. If you look at the app, you'll probably find out his full name. But yeah, he was once again absolutely outstanding as well. So yeah, I think it's a good opportunity for a lot of these clubs to try a few different things.
Try combinations.
So whilst you want to do that as well. But we know it started on Thursday night as well, and possibly they're not down for long, are they, Amon?
No, they're not. Well, what was the score there in the end?
Yeah, 42-14 over Marist, and, you know, Marist had, you know, done reasonably well the previous week, only going down to a stronger, shall I say, Grammar Tech side.
Listen, it's Grammar. They've got more excuses than Trump.
Oh, man. Hey, mate, we've got to get invited back to these clubs, brother.
Yeah, well, you'll get invited. They like you. Nobody likes me. But anyway, just keep going.
Oh, dear. Yep. So, interesting round. And, of course, we've got a round of games today happening, Amon.
Yes, we do. We have University versus Pakuranga in the championship and in the plate down at Waitemata Park. Now, I can't make it there. I know that the tempting offer to be your co-commentator was good because I have to say, I've had burgers at the Waitemata Rugby Club and they are some of the best. They're old-style burgers, which I like, but my doctors told me to keep away from those burgers and lovely pies. But with the University Pakuranga game, that one's just going to be hard to call. I think Pakuranga might be too strong. And I just want to wish both Waitemata and Eden all the best. You know, they came off different results last week, but I think it's for both of them. It's trying new combinations, and I like to, you know, obviously I want to see our boys win, and obviously for your interest, you want to see you guys win.
Yeah, I'm actually calling this for the live stream.
Yeah, I couldn't make it, mate, even though the burgers were tempting, Stephen.
Mate, if Gallagher Shields were one on Best Burgers, we'd probably have a few titles in our kit at the moment, mate.
Yeah, well, they wouldn't run a booze bill for me.
Absolutely not. We've also got, listen, just preceding that game, we've got the reserve game where the Waitemata Development Team is playing Puketapu Seniors, so that should be a good even contest as well. From what I believe, I think our boys may have drawn the game against East Tamaki last weekend, even though it says East Tamaki actually won the game. Compliments of our... Gee, they've got to fix this app, man. Seriously.
It is absolutely... I can tell you something. It is the most... It's confusing. It is absolutely confusing. I cannot follow it at all.
Absolutely. You know, it's... You know, you've got to be a decent sort of IT guy to follow it around. Yeah, crazy. Listen, just it gave me an opportunity just to check on that young hooker that was running around for College Rifles yesterday, and it's Xavier Leota. Boy, he's only a pint-sized hooker, but man, got all the absolute skills of the world. I got to say, I was also impressed with Jake Hutchings as well. Got a double yesterday, although probably blunted it a bit by getting a red card in the second half. He's also in that New Zealand under 20s squad. It probably rattles me a little bit that there's so much talent running around. You kind of wonder why they can't get it right at the very pointy end. But I guess that's a kōrero for another day, isn't it,
Amon? Yeah, well, I just had a call from, I was getting a new bit of furniture. Oh, and they were supposed to be delivering today. Oh, no, it's now changed to Tuesday. Anyway, not to worry, Stephen, have a great call, and we will catch up very soon. And I hope, hopefully, it's a good game of rugby.
Absolutely, mate. I'll be calling you each way, mate.
I know you will, Stephen. I know you know. One thing I have to say about you, Stephen, you're always straight to the point, and you're okay. So
you can say it, gracious loser.
You're actually okay. I'll leave you to it, Stephen. I better get on because I'm running a bit late here. Okay, have a great weekend, mate. Bye.
All the best, mate. Bye-bye now.
Yeah. Okay, that was Stephen Harris. And so next up, I'm going to get hold of Joey Green from Auckland. No, he's not from Auckland Rugby League. Sorry, guys. I'm trying to multitask here. So I will just get to that in a minute. Sorry, guys, we'll just get to this in a moment. It's just we're having some huge technical problems here. Just give me a second. This could really stuff up the show a bit, but anyway. Everyone, we're just running a bit late, so we might as well get into it. Good morning to Joey Green. Joey, big match this weekend for the Warriors.
Yeah, morning, mate. A long weekend for everyone else, not quite for the Warriors, but a big matchup tomorrow afternoon at Shark Park. I know it's got a different name at the moment, but Shark Park has been a happy hunting ground for the Warriors the last couple of years.
It certainly has, and I have to say, no Mitch Barnett, they've kept Tane Tapeke at fullback. You know, I look at this, there's a great chance, that this could be a real tough game, but the Sharks, they have one of the best packs in the NRL.
Yeah, they've got a really good forward pick, but they're just one of those really funny sides. They always seem to have great results against the top eight sides, not only this year, but the last few years. They go really good against the bottom eight sides, they get to the top eight, nine sides, and they kind of seem to, you know, fall away. So this is going to be a crucial matchup just to see where the Warriors will find themselves in the mix this season. I think they'll be a heck of a lot better after last weekend's performance. Metcalf and Boyd, you know, I think after reflecting on the, you know, the result last week, and it was their first game together at any level for Tanner Boyd and Luke Metcalf, so no doubt they'll be better for that. They didn't get a pre-season together. Metcalf coming off the back of a, you know, of an ACL injury. Jackson Ford with a few crucial errors last weekend, and I think a big talking point that's kind of gone under the radar is Dimitri Vaiomanga actually didn't see the field last weekend. He kind of fell out of that rotation. And I think what his spark that he brings off the bench has been a real difference maker for the Warriors this year. So we'll see him come back into the rotation with Barnett out. And I think that's going to be a really crucial point around that 25-30 minute mark when you see the Fisher-Harris and the Aaron Clark start to come off the field. You get his kind of spark coming back into the matchup along with Tanner Stowell-Smith and, you know, Maratiri Kore. I think that's going to be where the game could either be won or lost for the Warriors tomorrow afternoon.
Absolutely. Of course, some of the games played over the weekend. Wow, what a start for Kieran Foran as the Seagulls coach. 52 versus the Dolphins, 16, and an away win. Olakahu was fantastic. Lehi Hapawati, brilliant. Great start for Kieran Foran.
Yeah, Fosball seems to be running high and mighty at the moment. Realistically, should have been a lot higher for Manly. The Dolphins aren't looking too red hot at the moment, and we see the Warriors come up against them in a couple of weeks' time. So the Dolphins are going to need to find a quick fix to, you know, get their season back on track, because they've got the great side on paper, but they haven't been able to, you know, make it work on the field. Credit to Manly, though. You know, it's been a tough week. You know, since Anthony Seibold's sacking last week, Kieran Foran under a lot of pressure now to steer the season back on track, and he's done a great job to start it at home.
Absolutely, and of course then, yesterday we've had a couple of games. The Latrell Mitchell Show, South 32, the Bulldogs 24, Latrell Mitchell was just outstanding.
Yeah, 100%, and I thought, heading into halftime, the Bulldogs were up, and I thought Satili Tupanewa coming off the bench for the Bulldogs, Lipoi Hopoi, a name who's, you know, very rarely spoken of, they really changed the game. And the back end of that first half for the Bulldogs, but then the second half just all seemed to be South Sydney Rabbitohs. Joey Gray, Talis Duncan combined really well. Jamie Humphries and Cody Walker combining really well in the halves as well. Latrell Mitchell, like you said, wasn't all that busy, but when the Rabbitohs needed a moment, you give the ball to Latrell Mitchell and he always seems to get the job done. Obviously the scoreboard reads 32-24, but the Rabbitohs' second half was just pure dominance.
Absolutely, and of course this one, Panthers 50, Storm 10, and the Panthers are already 150 points ahead of everyone else. Now, you can say Cleary, but I'm going to say this right now. Casey McLean, he will probably be in the New South Wales State of Origin team and playing for the Kiwis. And this guy, Tom Jenkins. Now, the guy that's been the big star for years was Brian Toho, but this guy, Jenkins, he is just on fire.
100%, and I think if you're picking a New South Wales side after this round, that left edge has got to be Casey McLean and Tom Jenkins. I think people kind of forget as well, a lot of the footy heads don't really know, Thomas Jenkins at the start of last year didn't even have an NRL contract with the Penrith Panthers. He earned his way in on a training trial, and now look at where he is. He's, you know, probably the most informed winger in the comp at the moment. The other, you know, really telling stat about this Penrith Panthers side at the moment, yes, they've, you know, five big wins to start the season. The last time they've seen this kind of form was 2022. That season, though, they didn't win any of those games until round six. They didn't score 40-plus points until round six. They've already done that three times this year in a row. So we saw them win a premiership in 2022. Is it too early, you know, to be saying we might see a repeat of the Penrith dynasty again?
Absolutely. So we look at the games for the weekend. Well, the Dragons have the Cowboys and the Titans versus the Broncos.
Yeah, two really interesting matchups, you know, in terms of the Dragons and Nick Flanagan out with what looked to be a serious injury last weekend, but, you know, seems to be cleared of anything but that's probably better that he does get a rest over the next couple of weeks, like, and King Tongia comes in for him. You know, not purely because Kyle Flanagan's out of the side, but I think the Dragons are going to turn a corner this weekend and get the job done at home. The Cowboys will obviously be riding high after beating Melbourne last weekend and the Titans the week before, but the Dragons are just going to need to, you know, get the pressure off their back, and I think this afternoon is going to be a perfect opportunity for them to do that, and I think they will get the finally season 2 points next to their name.
Absolutely. So then of course on Sunday we have obviously we've spoken about the Warriors Sharks, Knights versus Raiders, and on Easter Monday it's the Eels versus the Tigers. Well, the Knights really still waiting the return of Dylan Brown and Kalen Ponga, but the Raiders are really, and even at this early stage, are in desperation.
Yeah, 100%. If Canberra had three losses on the trot, and especially a couple of those games being at home too, which is very, I guess, when you look at the Raiders teams off the past, is very unlike Ricky Stewart's side. They, you know, lost a tough matchup to the Bulldogs a couple of weeks ago. They really struggled to contain Braden Trindle and Nicho Hynes and Cronulla last week. And the Knights seemed to get, you know, a really tough job done against the Bulldogs last week. And Trey Mooney has really stood up since he's got a starting role at Newcastle. Fletcher Sharp and Sandon Smith, you know, neither of those guys were, you know, Fletcher Sharp rather finding his way back into the side after injury. Sandon Smith wasn't even the first choice halfback, you know, at the start of the season. But geez, they've been doing really well without, you know, their two superstars in Ponga and Dylan Brown. I think that they're going to go one better again this afternoon or tomorrow afternoon and put the Raiders under a whole lot more pressure.
Absolutely. And Eels versus Tigers, well, this one I actually think could be quite a cracking game. We saw what the Tigers done last week to the Warriors. The Eels, Mitch Moses, the real key there to what should be a fantastic game.
Yeah, 100%. Parramatta on Easter Monday, it always just seems to be one of those games that they get up for. Last year when we looked at this matchup, they beat the Tigers 40 points to 10. Yes, we've got a much more improved West Tigers side, and we saw that last weekend against the Warriors. But this is going to be a cracker way to finish off the round. Easter Monday, it's going to be a packed out Combank Stadium. Jock Madden, if he can stand up and, you know, show the form like he did last weekend, combining with Adam Dewey, then it's going to cause some selection headaches by the time Jerome Luai comes back in another 3 weeks. But Mitch Moses, he loves this Easter Monday game, and just always seems to be one of the games where, you know, big occasion, Parramatta needs someone to stand up, you give it to your halfback and they'll get the job done. I think it's going to be a tight tussle this weekend, to be fair, but you know, I'm looking forward to see how the West Tigers can back it up off last weekend, and I think the Tigers are going to get the victory Monday.
Okay, Joey. Well, listen, we will catch up next week. Have a great rest of the Easter weekend, and enjoy watching the rugby league.
Yeah, it's a cracker weekend of rugby league, mate. So looking forward to hopefully seeing the Warriors get a victory tomorrow afternoon compared to my Melbourne Storm side last night.
Yeah, well, Penrith just looks so good. Anyway, have a great weekend.
Cheers, mate. Chat again next week.
Cheers. That was Joey Green. And that was brought to you by WaterSmart. Weekend mission sorted, mate. Wash the car, rinse the boat, clean the bait station, and keep the wife's tomatoes happy, all with a WaterSmart tank. No water restrictions, no worries, different sizes to suit your property. Check out watersmart.co.nz and take control today. Anyway, so as we move on to it, as we keep moving on, we actually I was able to do an interview yesterday with Zion Dale from One News, and we spoke about the week that was. So this is brought to you by, and I'll get to that right now. God, it's been a hard day already. God. And this is brought to you by Enterprise Recruitments. Now, the biggest thing about Enterprise Recruitments, it's the old story. It's, I'll just get to this promo right now. Oh, I'll do the promo afterwards. Let's just get to the bloody interview. So, yeah, sorry, guys.
Where he's on the road, and he's a roving man that calls the week that was, and we haven't spoken in a while, but I know he's on a driving down the country to plan a bit of a golf get-together with some mates. Please welcome One News's Zion Dale. How are you, Zion?
Hello, mate. Good, thank you. Always have time to jump on your radio show. Don't worry about that.
No. The TVNZ roster, they know me now. I think they've already got a desk for me, to, you know, which might be an old broom cupboard or something. But hey, since last Saturday, well, it's been a bit of a week in sports in New Zealand. Obviously, last Saturday, good wins for the Canes, good wins for the Blues, and a gutsy win for the Chiefs in Super Rugby.
Yeah, that's right. I've been really impressed by the Hurricanes actually this season, and more so the tight five and the loose forwards. I think they're just absolutely damaging in and around the ruck, so close to the line. But yeah, look, for me at the moment, the Hurricanes are the form team. You know, I think at the start of the season, if you were to ask me who do you think would be on top again, I would say the Chiefs and the Crusaders. And I mean, that's not to say they won't be, but I just haven't seen that form just yet from those two teams, that dominant form from those two teams. But look, the Hurricanes, mate, they're absolutely on fire. Hopefully, I mean, I'm a Wellington boy, so I love seeing this, but I just think, you know, this is a group that have made the semi-finals two seasons in a row and always fall short at the hurdles, and probably have a team and have the season to go on and win Super Rugby. But you feel like if there's any time now, it would be this season for the Hurricanes to strike and win a championship.
Absolutely, I think, and of course, you're right. The combination Devin Flanders, he's really been a great revelation in Super Rugby this season. Anyway, we move on to Sunday. So there are a number of things that happened on Sunday. Obviously, Israel Asania's comeback. He ended up losing.
Yeah, I caught up with him probably a week before the fight, and I just wanted to get a gauge as to where he was in his career, and I mean, like, he's been to the top, right? He's probably got nothing to prove now. But, I mean, money talks, really. And I mean, the guys that he fights now, like Joe on the weekend, you know, for fighters like that, if they can beat Israel Adesanya, that's
sort of
the next sort of step into the UFC. So, look, I thought he controlled round one really well, actually, and I thought, oh, here we go. You know, this is one he looks like he could win, but just when he was on the back foot, under pressure, the reactions probably aren't as fast as they once were. He, under a lot of pressure and a lot of duress, and just couldn't hold on. I mean, it was sad to see, really, because he's a champion. But then, you know, talking to him, it's sort of, you know, he's already built a legacy. Whatever happens now is just extra, win or lose. And, it was a tough watch, but probably a fair result.
Absolutely. And of course, also on Sunday, now I almost confused my football analyst, Seamus Martin, by getting the days mixed up, and then we realised I was wrong and he was right. But the Phoenix Woman went down to West Sydney Wanderers. Any chance of a premiership played was pretty much gone. Obviously, they've got a big weekend ahead for them, because really, they're still in the top two. And top two means one thing. It means you get a home semi-finals.
Yeah, bit disappointing, that result, because I think if you're a team that's showing that you're a contender, sure, the Premier's paper are gone, but also in the lead into the finals, you want to be winning, you want to be improving, and you want to be winning well. And I mean, you just look at the table, the Western Sydney Wanderers at the very bottom, and the Wellington Phoenix have been playing some brilliant football, and it's games like that where they, you know, they should be winning. Just, you know, sure, for the Premier's plate, but also just for confidence heading into the finals. I mean, I saw some players in tears at the end of the game, which is great in some ways, because it shows how much this means to them and how much winning means to them. But also, at this part of the season, you want to be improving and putting games together, because when it comes to the finals, a scrappy game might get you through, but you want to be playing good football to ensure that you're winning.
Absolutely. And of course, then motorsports. Liam Lawson, ninth.
Yeah, just on that, I think terrific results, back-to-back points, and I think that has to be the minimum for Liam this season, because you look at one eye, he's found his feet after the first season, but now it's about points and performances, and I think it's just got to be a baseline. Points week in, week out, he's showing that the car's fast enough to do it, he can stay in there. Sure, a little bit of luck help, but, I mean, yeah, that's the benchmark for him now in my eyes, because, you know, in one way, he's still fighting for a spot next season as well.
Yeah.
But also, you know, they're at that mid-pack of the constructors and, you know, would love to be, you know, pushing for fourth, even third.
Yeah, and I think the big thing is with Liam Lawson is that I think consistency, and the more consistent, if you're seen as a point scorer, you know, whether he stays with Racing Bulls or Red Bull or attracts offers from other constructors, that comes into it. Just one thing before we wrap up motorsport, and I think this, we would be remiss if we didn't say this. The sad death for Maurie Chandler, a real motorsport legend, very much the organiser of the Rally of New Zealand, a fantastic bloke.
Yeah, and look, I think it's just, you know, someone like him is a testament to the community, and you know, like, to be completely honest with you, until I got into this job, motorsport, you know, we never grew up around motorsport, but you know, the way that I think more people have got into it, you know, and it's people like him, people like, you know, still doing great work. You know, is a real testament to the sport in this country and the rise in this country, because, I mean, you know, to be frank, it's when I was growing up, motorsport would be down the bottom of news bulletins, and, you know, at the moment, it's one of the big sports that, you know, people love to see, love to hear, whether it's F1, Supercars, NASCAR, Indy, and it's, you know, guys like him that have helped that, so, yeah.
I will also say, just and I probably would give us, you know, people like Murray Chandler, Colin Giltrap, some of the great pioneers. Also, you know, look at some of the journalists, and I think a guy that who appears on this show, Sean Summerfield, as a sports journalist, has really pushed for motorsport. And I think, you know, when we mention great people in motorsports, he is one of the great ones, old mate, the Silver Tongue, Silver Fox. Anyway, Monday we moved on. It was confirmed. I got an invitation to appear, but I had to work, but I bet you were down there. Well, Auckland FC will, in July 26th, will be playing Tottenham Hotspur. Now, the last time an Auckland team played Tottenham was in 1977, and then Tottenham were in the old second division, so it could be a bit of history repeating, but regardless of it, this still is a big club, an EPL club, depending if they're there this season, coming to Auckland, and it still has that legacy.
Yeah, 100%. And look, as much as I have so many friends that are Tottenham supporters, and I quietly enjoy what's happening to them at the moment, regardless of whether they're in the Championship or the Premier League, this is huge. It's absolutely massive, a massive club. It's something, again, to the testament of you know, those Auckland FC, to get a team like that to come down under, you know, it's absolutely fantastic. You know, as much as I am a Manchester United supporter and don't like Tottenham, I'll definitely be there. It's an occasion, especially in New Zealand, it's huge. You know, I remember the last time going to a game in Wellington, actually, it was West Ham and Newcastle.
Came. Yeah.
Even then, that was huge. Yeah, it's a Premier League club. You know, to be fair, any Premier League club that comes down under, I would definitely be there. But to have a team like Tottenham, it's huge. It's great for the game, great for the spectacle, and I think it's the right decision to be played on Eden Park.
Yes,
because,
it is.
You know, usually, because these things, you know, like, I remember last year Manchester United, probably a week after the final round of the Premier League, are on a plane playing in Hong Kong, and, you know, it's not that they just roll out their under-21s or their B team. The stars come, the big names in those teams come, because they know how valuable an opportunity it is for fans, marketing, and everything like that. So, no, it'll be a fabulous occasion, and I'm looking forward to it. And if I can get to it, I definitely will be there.
Absolutely. Okay, and also when we keep on the football theme, All Whites 4, Chile 1. This victory probably would be the best victory of the Darren Bazley era.
100%. They needed a response after Monday, and I was talking to you during the week, actually, just for confidence, not only for the team, but for the fans as well, because, you know, we've talked so much, and I've sort of alluded to it in my report, how much potential this team has, what they can do, and not just, you know, have that stigma around New Zealand that we make up the numbers. I mean, look, and by saying that, I don't mean they're going to go on and win every game at the World Cup, but they, you know, there's a real hope of, and I've said this to people before, it wouldn't surprise me if they made it through, if they made it past the group stage, and it wouldn't surprise me if they didn't, you know. Where in past years, I know we've only been to two World Cups. And...
Simon?
Against these teams and putting goals away, and that Chile performance was huge, that, because the next time...
Simon, we keep losing you, mate.
For a World Cup cap. Yeah, massive result. I just think they played to their potential. I think Monday and even the two windows before that against Ecuador, I can't remember the other team that they played, and then even after that, Australia, the South American teams, European teams, they competed but didn't get results. And I think even they were frustrated not to walk away with something or put in a performance like that. So it's absolutely huge. The next time that they play is against England. Well, yeah, warm-up game before that and England. So, yeah, that was very much needed and not long to go now before the first game of that World Cup.
And the week that, and probably to the week that really, probably one of the highlights of the week had to be Millie Kerr's innings against South Africa.
Sorry, what was that?
The probably the end of the week was a real highlight. Millie Kerr, her innings against South Africa, superb.
Oh, 100%. I think after the sort of blunder that they had in the first game, to come back and respond like that is great. And I actually think these games were terrific. You know, quality opposition, you've been put under a lot of pressure, and actually showing that they can come through these and win those games. But yeah, you know, it was one thing I think Amelia Kerr would have learned from the last match in the way of, I think, more so on a bowling side, the captaincy side, and would have wanted to come out and avenge that. So, no, absolutely fantastic. You think this is a never-ending tour of South Africa and in New Zealand?
Yep. Okay, Zion. We keep on losing you, mate. Looks like Zion has gone into a bit of a... an area where we can't see. Simon? You keep on losing it, but hey, that's great. Listen, this is what's happened at the weekend. Crusaders say goodbye to the 2-year temporary stadium that was there for 14 years. Auckland FC, Phoenix, men and women in the A-League, final one day, and of course the Warriors versus Shark. What will gain your interest over the weekend, apart from your golf handicap?
Look, plenty on, and also the lead into the Masters next weekend too. Look, I think for me, I completely forgot, more so for the spectacle, the last game at Apollo Project Stadium. I mean, I've been there, I used to live in Christchurch, I've been there, I've watched rugby league games there, I watched Super Rugby games down there, watched the British and Irish Lions game down there, so end of an era really, to be quite frank with you. It isn't a great stadium, but
no.
It's had so much history over the last few years that you know, I think watching that will bring back some memories for me. So certainly that, and the Warriors need a bounce back performance from them. The start of the year so well, we're a bit flat against the Tigers, but yeah, I mean, this will be huge this week against the Sharks, just to see the resilience, what resilience this team has.
Absolutely, well, Zion, I hope your little golf catch-up goes well. Always great chatting, and I've got no doubt we'll be chatting probably very, very soon. Enjoy the rest of your Easter weekend.
I think I'm losing you, but yeah, no, all sounds good. Have a great weekend, plenty of sport to watch, and yeah, we'll catch up soon to talk.
Cheers, Zion, thank you, cheers.
And that was Zion Dale from One News. And just to let you know, this was, and that segment was brought to you by Enterprise Recruitments. Finding the right people can be hard, and it can be a difficult process. There are so many unexpected surprises that can happen. So eliminate those unexpected surprises by contacting Enterprise Recruitment. They will find the right people to suit your business needs. So contact Enterprise Recruitment, enterprise.co.nz. So big thanks to Ian and Warwick there. Okay, next up, we're just going to talk to the big fella, Mr. Seamus Martin. Oh, Well, big old jet airliner. God, I don't know, mate. Definitely not a lot of fuel going around, and that's why the prices to travel is so high. Anyway, before we get on to our next segment, if you're wanting to sell, if you're wanting to buy, this is the person you need to get hold of. His name is Robert Thompson. Absolute brilliant agent, has a heap of knowledge, willing to assist you in getting the best result, whether you're buying or whether you're selling or whether you're just looking to get advice on that Auckland property market. Robert is the right person to contact. His number is 021 737 949, or you can email him r.thompson@barfords.co.nz. Well, we go to football and here to join us as he joins us most every Saturday from Between Two Bears podcast, that small popular podcast in New Zealand, Mr. Seamus Martin. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Eamon. Happy Easter. How are you going?
Yeah, happy Easter, mate. I believe you're down the line and with the family, enjoying yourself. So good on you, man.
Thank you very much. Yeah, just time to walk along the beach to get back home in order to talk a little bit of footy with you on a Saturday morning.
Yeah, no, obviously, you know, it's not about enjoying family time on a Saturday morning. It's to make sure that idiot calls out from Auckland to speak about a football.
Well, we've done a lot of the football yesterday, haven't we? It's been 24 hours, and there's almost nothing to look forward to today.
Well, there isn't, and we can't even stuff, and there's no EPL this weekend, so we can't be criticised for our picks. But what I will start off is, always for Chilly One, these were some of my takes. Ben Old, who's been playing for Etienne in France at left back, was put to there, and he was fantastic. Joe Bell, solid, but Costa Barbarousis and Jesse Randall have now secured their seats on the plane.
Yeah, look, it's much different waking up on Tuesday morning than it was going to bed on Friday night, wasn't it? After that match against Finland, I think you and I spoke about it last week. You know, we're very concerned about how this was going to go. What a difference a couple of days make. That performance against Chile, 4-1 win, yes, it was against 10 men, but you still got to put to the sword whoever's in front of you. And I thought Darren Baisley's All Whites did an excellent job of putting a performance together that, one, gives them a lot of confidence, but two, gets the football fans back on their side, because there was a lot of goodwill coming out of Eden Park on Monday. You're right in identifying some of those key performers. I thought Oldie filling in at left back, but as you rightly point out, he's been playing there for Saint Etienne in France. Put his foot forward as a potential, utility. We're used to seeing him in midfield or further up the pitch. He showed he can handle it at international level at left back. I think with the injury to Francis de Vries, that becomes an interesting proposition, and Libby Kakache still not really sure what percentage of fitness he's at the moment. So some versatility there. I think Costa Barbarousis rightly said in his post-match comments on TVNZ, it was an important game for him, and he very much put his best foot forward. And Elijah Just showed the form, in my mind, that he's showing in the Scottish Premier League in the all-white shirt.
Yep.
And he's become a really consistent performer over the years. I think I saw some stat where since his debut there might have been 46 games and he's played in 43 of them, so I think that underlines his value to the side. And the good news, I guess, for football fans is there's still potentially the likes of Kakache, of Chris Wood, of Sarpreet Singh all to be added to this all-white squad come World Cup time. So look, a lot of positives to take out of that, but I think most importantly it's a positivity around this all-white side at a vital time when, if the result had gone the other way, I think there would be a lot of doom and gloom around New Zealand football.
I am going to say this right now to you. To me, this has probably been, this Chile side, the Chilean side, it's a different side. There's been a lot of retirement. So this is the side that will be moving forward for Chile. And the coach has said, we need to change. We need to bring younger players in. This is the most defining win in Darren Baisley's management.
Oh, look, without a doubt. Absolutely without a doubt. I think there was a lot of pressure, maybe seen or unseen, going into the game against Chile, a higher ranked opponent than we faced against Finland, and a different style of football. And never has New Zealand beaten South American opposition, either here at a World Cup or at an international tournament or away in South America. So I don't think you can skip over just how important that result was in terms of Darren Baisley's tenure. And it probably gives him a little bit of breathing space as well, as he looks to settle on the final 26 names that he puts in the travel agent's bookings to get over there to North America. I would suggest, I've got no real inside oil on this, but I would suggest at least 23 of the 26 names are probably written in pen, and there was a couple in pencil. I think there's not too many places on that seat that are still available. What he'll be sweating on now is whether going back into club football there are any unforeseen injuries, any form slumps or form dips, although I think he's probably in his mind, made his mind up on some of these players, so it really will come down to whether they can stay fit and healthy, or whether those that are on the injured list currently can regain full fitness in time for the World Cup.
Absolutely. And of course then, yesterday, Northern League football, and these were the results in the...
There's one you can skip over, Eamon, I'll tell you that now. There's one result...
It's the first one on the list. Sensible 7, Melville 1. East Coast Bay's 3, Batacow 0. Bay Olympic 1, Tauranga City 0. Auckland City FC 0. Birkenhead United 1. Eastern Suburbs 0. Auckland United 1, Western Springs 1, Auckland FC Reserves 1. Now, just in the Women's Northern League, Ellerslie 8.
You can skip over here as well.
Yeah, I know. They're all at the top. Ellerslie 8, Melville 3, Western Springs 0, West Coast Rangers 7, Fencibles 1, Auckland United 2. There is a game on Sunday in the Northern League Women's, Eastern Suburbs versus FC Tauranga Moana. Easter Monday, these will be the games in the men's Northern League. It is Tauranga versus Fencibles, who have started off with a flyer. Auckland United versus Auckland City FC, the Dominion Road Derby. Birkenhead versus Auckland FC Reserves. So let's go through Tauranga versus Fencibles. Fencibles are on a bit of a flyer, aren't they?
They are 3 from 3. They absolutely put Melville United to the sword yesterday up there at River Hills Park on the turf. They looked really, really good. They really did look good. Now, I will say this. You know, they've played against Monaco, who were promoted. They've played against Melville, who were promoted. This could be the first test, but at the moment, I see them winning this game. I really do. Form is hot at the moment. They're playing very good football. I suggest they win that game.
Dominion Road Derby. This one's a tough one to call. I see a draw in this.
Yeah, look, Auckland City are not the same Auckland City that we've seen. They've already dropped two matches, which, you know, we perhaps saw last year, and they came good in the end. Auckland United really impressed me when they came down to Hamilton to take on Melville in that first round. They won that game 4-1. They've built a really strong Northern League type squad there at Keith Hay Park. I'm going to suggest they're going to heap a little bit more pressure on Rudy, who's now coaching Auckland City, and suggest that Auckland United win that game.
Birkenhead versus Auckland FC Reserves. This one is an interesting one.
Yeah, Auckland FC Reserves are a very, very good side. Rory Fallon now in charge of them. The OFC Pro League to Northern League combination of players or crossover of players is pretty influential there. I think Auckland FC, they could go close to winning the title or at least finishing in the top three positions this season. I'll suggest that they win that game there.
Okay, so we go to the other three games. Manukau United versus Bay Olympic. Your Melville versus Eastern Suburbs and Western Springs versus East Coast Bays. Well, I'm going to start off with Western Springs versus East Coast Bays. I'm actually going to pick an East Coast Bays victory in this one.
Yeah, like I know you had a soft spot. I remember you have a soft spot for East Coast Bays last year as well. And Joe Hall's doing wonderful work up there north of the bridge. It's a settled squad. There's no real superstars or big names that jump out off the paper. Players have come through the club there. I still think Western Springs have probably got a little bit too much for East Coast Bays. But I'll suggest that game finishes in a draw for me.
And of course, then we've got Manukau Bay Olympic, and I would have to say you'd have to give it to Bay Olympic at this stage.
Yeah, I think Bay Olympic will be too strong for a Monaco side that have been promoted as champions from the championship. Like Melville, I think finding just that step up a little bit to get to the flow of where the Northern League's at. So Bay Olympic for me start as the favourites. And while I can't tip against my side,
I can, and I'm picking Eastern Suburbs all the way, mate. Sorry.
Okay, look, I won't tip against my side, Melville. novel, but I'll suggest that game finishes as a draw. There you go.
Set it on the fence. Good on you. Okay, last night, a couple of games in the A-League Women's. Well, Wellington Phoenix Women's 2, Adelaide United 0. The Women's Phoenix have secured semi-finals football and have secured a home semi-final.
Yeah, 2 goals in 4 minutes. Shocking marking from Adelaide off 2 set pieces, both headed goals. Wellington knew exactly what they had to do to keep their home finals chances in their own hands. They've gone across to Adelaide. They've done the business. They now get at least 3 weeks off before they're into finals action. So a chance for rest, recuperation, maybe for Bev Pressman to hit the training ground after the international break and try and come up with some more confidence. But look, excellent from the club's perspective to have secured their first ever finals appearance. And now they've got the benefit of a home semi-final, which will be played on the weekend of the 9th and 10th of May. Who they play against is still yet to be determined because the playoff picture is still up in the air. But I think, having the ability now to exhale and say, yes, we've done the job and we can focus on an away semi-final first and then a home semi-final back in front of their fans at Porirua Park, I think will be really, really
good. And I think they're going to get a big crowd out there. I think the yellow fever has really taken to, as we call it, Bev Ball, and they've really got a superb following.
Oh, definitely. Look, the Bevolution has just come to fruition. They back-to-back defeats. They were under pressure going into Adelaide, which is not an easy place to go and get a result. And a really professional performance. 2 goals, clean sheet, finals, job done, big tick in the box. But a little bit frustrating for the game that kicked off after that, Auckland FC versus Adelaide United. Look, MacArthur had done Auckland a huge favour the night before, defeating the Newcastle Jets 3-2 to mean that if Auckland had won that game against Adelaide, they would just be a point behind Newcastle in the Premier's plate race. But Auckland couldn't get the job done. They went behind. They did well to scramble back. They threw absolutely everything at Adelaide, who defended resolutely, and they just weren't able to come up with the winner. I think Steve Corica and Auckland FC will be extremely frustrated to come away from South Australia with just a point and a missed opportunity to put pressure on Newcastle in the lead-up to that Premiership run-in.
And, of course, also over the weekend, it's the Phoenix are away to the Melbourne Victory.
Yeah, and look, it was really cool through the week. I don't know if you caught it, but to see Paul Eiffel in camp with Wellington Phoenix.
Brilliant, eh? Hey,
he's a good... Not exactly.
Good guy.
Yeah,
a legend.
Yeah, he is a club legend, and not in an official capacity, but he was there in the tracksuit. He hasn't joined the coaching staff, but they haven't in and around the training ground
yet.
I understand Big Ben Sigmund was invited in as well, and these are guys that...
Yeah, great bloke, Siggy, eh? Fantastic.
Yeah. Exactly, a couple of club legends to get in and get around the team. And look, they're only 3 points outside of the playoff conversation. If they're able to have a week in Victoria where they played both the Victory on Sunday and Melbourne City next week as well, who knows, they could be a smoky to come in sixth place. And geez, wouldn't it be exciting to see Auckland FC versus Wellington Phoenix in the playoffs? How about that?
I would say that right now, with what's happening with the Phoenix, I think it would be a different type of game, Seamus.
Oh, look, it's a mouth-watering clash. There's still a lot of water to flow under the bridge at the moment, but, who's to say that isn't an elimination final if Auckland keep having the yips as they've got at the moment, it seems. Maybe they finish in third and they play a Wellington Phoenix side that are in sixth position. Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows? Anyway, we go to FA Cup weekend. It's quarterfinals. So these are the games. Manchester City versus Liverpool. Chelsea versus Port Vale, which will have All Whites striker Ben Wayne playing for them. Southampton versus Arsenal. And West Ham versus Leeds. So we start off the big one. That Manchester City versus Liverpool. I'm going to have to say Manchester City on this, Seamus. Even though I want to see both of your sides lose,
Look, it's a big arm wrestle, isn't it? It stands out as the fixture on paper. I'm going to tip the Reds to win this one. I've got to go with my heart on this, and hopefully the Reds can get a trophy in the cabinet, and it looks like the only option they'll have this year is the FA Cup.
And then we've got Chelsea versus Port Vale. You have to favour Chelsea, but wouldn't it be great to see Ben Wayne have a very good game and really impress? And he's come back, and he's, we saw it with the All Whites. He's full of confidence.
Yeah, he is full of confidence. And look, the romance of the Cup suggests that would be the one that you'd love to see as a boil over, but form suggests that Chelsea will be too strong for Port Vale. But what an opportunity and what an experience. You want the All Whites players to be playing in these big matches in the lead up to the World Cup, so it'll be an amazing experience for Ben Wayne. But I think Chelsea will be too strong for Port Vale.
Southampton versus Arsenal. Now, this one, if there's going to be an upset, I think this is the one, Seamus.
Yeah, you're potentially right, but I think Arsenal are on track for a double here, and I think they will comfortably account for Southampton. I don't think the Saints will get up. I think Arsenal will be too strong.
Now this one. Now, Speedy, our friend Speedy, who regular fan to the show, he's very interested in what you're going to pick, because West Ham and Leeds are really both in a relegation fight at the moment. Both of them are. There's no two ways about it. But
they definitely are, but isn't it funny that sometimes a cup run can just give a little bit of positivity around the joint when things aren't going well in the league? And I think West Ham are going to win this one. Sorry, Speedy.
If you're listening, Speedy, you can give me a text tomorrow if the result doesn't go bad, because, you know, he has been checking every time you pick someone else, he goes, oh, that's great, because I know we're going to win.
I feel like West Ham will win this game in advance to the final four, and maybe it's a chance to spread a little bit of joy around what's been a disappointing season for the Hammers.
It certainly has. Well, of course, then we get in, of course, the big news, Tottenham Hotspur's coming to Auckland. As I said, the last time Tottenham were there, the last time Tottenham came to New Zealand was in 1977 at Newmarket Park, 10,000 people. They beat Auckland and Auckland selection 5-3. Interesting fact, Tottenham were in the old second division back then.
And look, I think they might be in the championship here. I've said it for the last couple of weeks. I think it was the Nottingham Forest Tottenham game a few weeks back where I suggested whoever wins this game, the loser will end up being relegated. Well, it was Tottenham that lost that game. There's just not a lot of positivity around that joint. Wonderful, wonderful. Let's zoom out and say wonderful for New Zealand to get a brand, a global brand.
I still think it's a big club. And at the end of the day, it's huge. It's bigger than Wrexham. It's bigger than this is huge. And there will be a lot of fans out there. I think, you know, when you look at it, Spurs are a very popular, they've still got a big New Zealand fan base. So that's the main thing, and I think it's going to be a great occasion.
Well, look, no doubt in my mind, and it's part of a wider series that's happening down in Australasia. So who knows, there might be more announcements around other teams coming to New Zealand shores, and, you know, off the back of Tottenham coming down. But look, that'll be off the back of a World Cup that'll be leading into the next edition of the A-League. Who knows, you know, we might be defending champions Auckland FC taking on Tottenham Hotspur. There's so much football to come, but the fact that we're getting these sort of top games, like we saw with the FIFA series, like we saw with All Whites versus Finland, All Whites versus Chile, the more of these kinds of matches that we can have that kids are able to see in front of them with their own eyes will just infuse another generation to fall in love with the beautiful game.
Absolutely. Well, Seamus, you enjoy the rest of the weekend and have a good Easter to you and your family, mate.
Oh, thanks very much. Already too many hot cross buns and too many Easter eggs consumed on Good Friday.
So yeah, I prefer
another walk on the beach this afternoon.
Yeah, well, I prefer the softer Easter eggs, the marshmallow ones. They're easier on your teeth.
Yeah, look, I've always been a marshmallow fan, but the minute we start to steer into Easter egg content, probably the football's expired, so I'll let you carry on with the show.
Yeah, okay, and you have
a wonderful break.
Yeah, I better talk some more sports. Catch you later, Seamus. Bye. Seamus Martin, fantastic. Next up, I will be speaking to Gordon Noble Campbell as we look at the fuel crisis and how it could affect community sport.
When I was young, it seemed that life was so wonderful. A miracle, oh, it was beautiful, magical. And all the birds in the trees, they'd be singing so happily. Oh, joyfully, oh, playfully, watching me. But then they sent me away, teach me how to be sensible, logical, oh, responsible, practical. And then
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Well, we're all a bit concerned out there. The fuel crisis has, it's got a lot of people worried. A lot of people who would be away on holidays or are taking the opportunity now or not going because obviously that, you know, the costs are up. We see daily reports on fuel supplies in this country. At the moment, we're at level one. But if this crisis was to change, it affects a lot of people, and it affects a lot of organisations, and one of them being community sports. I've got the great pleasure. He's been on our show before, Gordon Noble Campbell. He is the board chair for New Zealand Amateur Sports Association. So, good morning to you, Gordon.
Kia ora, Amon. Thank you for having me on the show. It's always a real pleasure to be able to join you on a Saturday morning.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we suppose we look at this fuel crisis, and at the moment we're at level one, but if levels were to change, you know, the biggest concern would be what happens to community sports. It's not only with the cost of fuel, it's possibly times of where the restrictions could come in to whether community sports becomes an essential for... and it's not the decision. We know it's essential for our community, but whether it's essential in a bigger national wider scheme of things.
Yeah, absolutely. At the end of the day, as we know, weekend sport for many families is a real highlight of their week, and it's particularly important for young people to be able to be actively engaged and involved in whatever sporting code or codes they're interested in participating in. I guess probably, as you've already indicated, the challenge will be for many families, particularly where you have more than one child who needs to get to a different game at a different time in a different part of the city, in some cases over reasonable distances these days, it will become more of a challenge. And I think families will be thinking carefully about how they can manage that financially, given, as you've mentioned, the cost of petrol keeps going up. And look, I guess there's lots of different ways and strategies that people will be thinking about, including the obvious ones like carpooling. When I was a nipper, Amon, back in the 1970s, I can recall very fondly how back in the day, three or four rugby teams were loaded in the back of a furniture truck and trundled along State Highway 1 from the Kapiti Coast into Porirua or into Wellington to play games. I'm not suggesting that's going to happen again.
Oh, it won't happen now, not with health and safety.
But there was always a couple of adults strategically placed at the end of the back of the truck to make sure the kids didn't get too close to the edge. But anyway, I'm not suggesting that is a strategy today, but definitely carpooling and how to share getting teams around will be, you know, a consideration that many families and clubs will take. The other thing that I'll mention too, which I think is worthy of consideration, particularly with junior sport now that we're heading into the winter season, in the Wellington region where I'm from, one of the things that has been quite important over the years is what we call zone sport, where actually, particularly for junior clubs, they tend to play within their immediate neighbourhood or regional local suburb, and the draws have been constructed to try and facilitate that, because that actually makes a real difference for families too, knowing that they can actually get around and to the different venues without too much difficulty, and particularly if they've got more than one child playing sport in a club, whether it's football, soccer, football, rugby league, whatever it might happen to be. So maybe we'll see a little bit more of that too, if sporting administrators can get their heads around that. In Auckland, of course, it's a challenge over the distances, but I think strategies like that are going to become quite important.
Now, this is a hypothetical question, but if we were to go to, let's say, another level where basically, or even God help us, we went to a thing where there was only certain days you could travel, this would really affect community sports. Now in Auckland and probably in Wellington, we do have motorway systems that sets us apart, but with the cost of fuels or potential of people, you know, people going to training, like there could be people that live a distance but go and play for their, you know, go to practice for their local club. That becomes the effect. And of course, then we look at some of the rural areas. Like, take for instance, it's, if the government says, hey, at the end of the day is, we would prefer if you don't use up diesel, if you don't use petrol, so that we can save some, and then community sports becomes effective. Like, to hire a bus now is absolutely huge, and a lot of these country teams, they rely on that sort of transport. This becomes a real issue.
Absolutely, 100%. And I'm not quite sure what the solution to that is. I doubt that government will provide some type of exemption for community sport, but to the extent that it contributes to the well-being of society, they might need to give that, you know, specific consideration. And not only with the club season, Eamon, but if you think a few more months out...
Yeah, NPC and...
Get into the representative season, yeah. Not only NPC, but even...
Heartland.
Just within local regions,
yeah.
There is a huge reliance on being able to access transport, and actually, you know, big demand on grant funding as well to actually provide the money to make that happen. And as we know, that's also under pressure at the moment. Pass for gambling community grant funding is becoming harder to get, and as we know, with the online casino gambling bill now having gone through its second reading, it's going to become an act of parliament reasonably shortly. There is a fear that any funding that might be raised through that source is going to become very hard for local community sport clubs to access, simply because it's only being made available through the lottery grants board, which doesn't tend to, like your local community trust, give you the opportunity to hire a bus. You know, funding to hire a bus for your rep program, that doesn't tend to be the lottery grant board's, you know, usual type of funding. So, yes, on all sides, Eamon, there is all sorts of challenges looming.
It would be interesting to hear the views of the Sports Minister, Mark Mitchell, on this, because, you know, whether people have spoken to this, and I suppose in many ways, if we went to that scenario, that's really, really concerning, because, you know, you have a look, like, take for instance, we go into NPC where most of the teams travel, and if we've only got so many days of travel, do they become essential travel people?
Yeah, well, that's right. Look, I think there's a difference between the professional game and the amateur game, for a start. So, and we've seen... you know, with the various rules that have applied, you know, like in COVID times and so forth, there tends to be a bit of a distinction between the two. If we think of the amateur game in particular, I think, you know, government probably will struggle to figure out how it could make that workable when there is rationing or restrictions in respect of fuel. Typically, if we go back to COVID times or around that era, how government made funding available to community sport was via Sport NZ and through the regional sports trusts, and then local clubs could apply to get funding to keep the lights on in their clubs and so forth. So, you know, there is the potential that they might be able to do something in the fuel space as well in that regard. But as you can imagine, there'd be a fair bit of organisation and thinking to go on about that. So when it comes to professional sport, well, NPC is semi-professional, I guess, but certainly you would imagine that they would possibly be considered, because people's livelihoods depend on it, to be supported in some way, shape or form. But, you know, that's a good question to ask the minister, perhaps.
Yeah, and I suppose if we look at it, like, we hope that it doesn't come to this, but I believe that it has to be, this issue needs to be spoke about, because, you know, and I think rugby unions and sporting organisations, I really hope they've got a plan B for this.
Well, it's actually a really good discussion to have at the board table of any regional sporting organisation, or even at national sporting organisation levels. I sit on a couple of boards for sport outside of the one that I'm representing today, and I think we will be having conversations about this and thinking of contingency plans in and around it. And, you know, one of the things as well, even with, you know, senior club sport, whether it's rugby or something else, administrators can think about, well, how do we look at the draw over the next 3 months? Do we actually focus or try and structure the draw over the short to medium term on local club derbies and then, you know, some of the more more distant home and away games perhaps get pushed to the back end of the season when things might have become more normalised? He says, fingers crossed, who would know? but you know, these are the types of conversations that probably need to be had to keep people engaged. I can see the situation where a local club team might actually be drawn to play, I don't know, 30, 40 kilometres away from their home base, and on any given weekend, given the difficulty or challenges of getting there, say simply, look, we'll default that game. We won't play that one, simply because we can't get everybody there, or we can't guarantee everybody will get there to be able to play. That's a, you know, that's a realistic possibility. So it would be good if administrators can think about this and say, well, actually, we should probably try and avoid that occurrence by having a look at the way that we put our competitions together. Try and focus on getting the local teams to play locally. Certainly in the cities or the urban centres, that's going to be more realistic because you do have more club communities in local geographic areas. Out in the countryside, obviously, more rural areas, it's going to be a lot harder. And we know, obviously, that many teams travel long distances every Saturday or Sunday just to get to their, you know, to be able to play their local competition.
Absolutely. And of course, you're also involved in radio, and you've been involved for a long time with covering Wellington Club Rugby, and it's quite a big weekend for you guys.
Yes, thanks, Eamon. The Swindale Shield gets underway this Saturday afternoon. I'll be broadcasting a fixture from Rugby League Park, which, interestingly and rather peculiarly, is the home now of Wellington Rugby, even though it's called Rugby League Park.
Yeah. Some moves to get I know where it is, yeah.
So, no, we've got a 14-team competition in the Premier Men's grade, which kicks off today, and it's always keenly anticipated and a jolly good competition too. One of the interesting things this year, and I'm not quite sure what it's like in other regions around New Zealand, there is a growth in the women's game as well. So in the senior women's game here in the Wellington region, I think we have 11 premier teams. Which
11
is,
premier teams in Wellington. That's actually bigger than Auckland, Gordon. Because you've got to look at Auckland. Auckland, the Auckland competition is drawn out of Auckland, North Harbour and Counties Manukau.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's great to see, and great to see the support of the women in the game here in the capital, and it's a really good competition too, so we'll be following that one closely. However, having said that, more broadly, the numbers continue to be a challenge, particularly further down the grades, with some teams struggling in the Colts division, for example. The Colts, which is the under-21s, was due to kick off this weekend, but that's been deferred by another week as there's another review of the draw just to make sure that it all works for the teams that are available. And if you think back a few years, Eamon, you know, there was across the unions, certainly in Wellington, possibly in Auckland as well, to have a Premier Men's team, you needed to have a Premier 2 team, you needed to have a Colts team.
Yep. And a women's or a restricted team,
That's right. Now, those days are kind of changing quite rapidly, and I think, you know, rugby, like all sports, needs to focus on keeping people engaged. One of the strong competitions in the Wellington region, which gets underway next week, is the under 85 men's.
Absolutely.
Grade.
Played it myself here in Auckland, Gordon.
Good on you. Going from strength to strength, too. You know, very dynamic rugby. The smaller guys running hell for leather for 80 minutes and having a great time. And it's good to see these weight-restricted grades being played and fostered, because I think that's actually quite important for the game long-term. Keeps the young men involved and enjoying themselves, as opposed to having to play in the unrestricted weight grades where the size mismatches can be quite extensive. So it's all good. It's all to play for, and we're looking very much forward to the season getting underway here in Wellington this Saturday afternoon.
Well, Gordon, thank you so much for your time and making your time available. I hope you have a wonderful Easter, and I hope you have a good call today. And it's always great to see that on a radio network, they're covering club rugby. It's something I haven't heard of in a long time. And
before we go on, Eamon, I should say this year is the 100th year of continuous club rugby broadcasting in Wellington. The first year was 1927. First game was between Old Boys and Victoria University, commentated by a man called Charles Lamberg on the 2YA station. but since then, right through until today, it's been a continuous flow of club rugby commentary, and we think it's probably the only place in the world where that record can actually be still said to be intact and true. So we're looking to celebrate that, and as you'll appreciate, and your listeners will appreciate, the great thing about radio and commentary is that you can be driving your car, you can be in the garden, you can be walking the dog, you can be having a lie down, whatever the case may be, but you can get the full story about what's going on, and we look forward to bringing that to Wellington. And, of course, you can tune in via the World Wide Web if you're in other parts of the country as well.
Well done to you, Gordon, and have a wonderful Easter. I hope we can chat again. I'm really hoping, fingers crossed, that we're not talking later on the track about a potential crisis.
Well, we'll keep well abreast of everything, Eamon. And once again, thank you for having me on your show. Keep up the good work, and we appreciate all you do.
Thank you very much, Gordon, and I appreciate what you guys do. Cheers. And that was Gordon Noble Campbell. Fantastic, it's a pleasure to always talk to Gordon because he is such a wonderful person. Anyway, next up we've got Lee Piper. Yeah, Gordon, thank you so much, mate. That was... Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Well, we're coming to the last part of the show, which is the panel, and I'm running a bit late, but that's what's happened. A big thanks to Father Ted's Original Irish Pub. A big thanks to Force Electrical, WaterSmart. A big thanks to Enterprise Recruitment and Robert Thompson from Barford and Thompson, Epsom Branch. So, we get to the panel and deciding to turn up, because he went missing last week, was Lee Piper. Hello, Lee. How are you, mate?
Yes. Oh, look, I'm well, thanks. I apologise for that. As a lot of your listeners will understand, I actually got caught out with Colts rugby and trying to organise 100 of them and none of them doing what they were saying, and it got too much, but I left you in more capable hands.
Well, a person that appreciates the commitment I make to broadcasting, you know.
Yes.
Maybe.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'll let that go. Anyway, we'll talk a bit of rugby. Well, the Crusaders, they demolished Fiji and Drua. They say goodbye to Apollo Project Stadium. Well, the stadium that was a temporary stadium for 2 years for when we build the new big stadium, and basically they moved to Takaha, the new home. But some of my thoughts on that match last night: Cody Taylor, fantastic player, 150 Super Rugby games, over 50 tries and 4 tries last night, I think, and there's still talk about him being a potential bolter for the All Black captaincy.
Yeah, look, I don't think it was any surprise in the result of that match, and you know, they'll be pretty pleased to get away from there. What'll be interesting, I think, as they move to the new stadium is how that changes the way they play, because, you know, you've seen, even with the Highlanders, which is their only example, you know, that they very much play helter-skelter and try to get the ball wide because their stadium allows them to do so. And I'm not saying that won't affect the Crusaders, but that they do like to slug it out at Apollo Stadium, and they've won many matches doing that. The dew that kicks in, and particularly those in the South Island will know this around, you know, from now, really, daylight saving finishes tonight in New Zealand. That's going to really, you know, it's almost like turn the lights off. So that will have an effect. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. What was also interesting, just as a side note, Eamon, was New Zealand changed the law on Thursday. They didn't do it here, and I'm in the Gold Coast, just relaxing because of the pressure you put me under. But the pubs here,
what pressure? You know, and by the way, you're not helping the fuel crisis at all, mate. You did jaunting overseas?
Oh no, I paddleboard.
Yeah, right.
anyway, the meals here, you had to have a sit down with knife and fork, and otherwise you couldn't get in, which is really strange. And as I say, I know New Zealand changed it on Thursday, but there was a lot of sport on here yesterday. They had three games in a row, and cracker games too of NRL. They had a full day of racing, and their big pub here, and the Gold Coast, their sports bar, they were virtually empty because no one could go in there without having a sit-down meal. So really, you know, you just look at the stupidity of it, really, Eamon, because at those grounds and at the races, everybody was, you know, 50,000, I think, went to watch the Cowboys take on South, yeah. And they were all, you know, boozing up, I guess is the term, and having a few beers and just enjoying Good Friday, and yet down at the local, you can't watch the game because you've got to eat something. So just craziness, really. But, yeah, I think... Sorry.
Yeah, keep going, Lee.
No, I was just saying. So, no surprise there, but I think some key games coming up in the next few weeks, I think, might decide the shape of that six. See, the Highlanders have lost Jacob Nipkins, but I note that Finn Hurley played club rugby on Friday, so he no doubt there'll be a swap in for that. Big Salamau, the big tight head prop, came in, so that would help them if he came back. He's a great scrummager along with Ethan De Groot. Highlanders have got the Brumbies, and then they're away to the Blues, and then they go to Fiji. So, look, if they could win those three or two out of the three, they'd be back in the mix. But Fiji, it's not at La Toka, but that would be difficult. The Hurricanes, look, all their tough games to come. I know everybody's talking them up, and quite rightly, but they've played no one. They've literally played... I think they've played one New Zealand side, which I think was the Highlanders, which they had a big win in, but they really haven't been tested, so their test is to come. So interesting rounds coming up, just to see when they really clash in with the New Zealand teams, you know, how they go. But they do look particularly strong and with good depth.
And when you look at it, we shouldn't forget the Australian teams. They've improved out of sight in the last two seasons. Yeah. And you look at the Brumbies, and you also look at the Reds, they are potential contenders in this competition.
Yeah, but they're good at home, and that's like Fiji. You know, like everyone knows going to La Toka is a death warrant. And ironically, Moana Pacifica, in their only win of the season, won there in the first game. We had no one, including, you know, the Crusaders, the Hurricanes. No one goes to Fiji and wins. And we saw that with the Hurricanes. But they come to New Zealand and they just can't. They just can't turn up. And that was evident, obviously, last night. A little bit the same with the Australian sides. You know, you take on the Reds in Queensland and even the Waratahs at New South Wales. That's a lot different than playing them at home. And you can see this with the topsy-turvy nature of you know, how they're playing when they play at home. You know, there's lots of upsets if you, the form book gets thrown out the window when they play each other on home soil. But when they have to travel to New Zealand, it's a bit tougher. It's a bit tough. So that's going to come up. The other thing that's coming down the pipes, I want to maybe just have a touch on, is ANZ Premiership Netball. Premiership Netball, that continues to, you know, be in the headlines for all the wrong reasons. I see that they've, in the last few weeks, they've advertised for three new board members and a new CEO. That's a massive change. Over here in Australia, of course, their competition, the Super Netball competition, has been underway. And it's, as always, you know, really tight. You know, to make the top four, only the Firebirds and the Giants haven't had wins, but the Firebirds have only been beaten, you know, of those three losses they've had, two were within two or three goals. And the Thunderbirds and the Vixens lead with 3 out of 3. But again, you know, I watched a few games of this over the weekend, yesterday, and I've watched a wee bit streaming, and it's taken to another level. And, you know, they've got 8 really competitive teams. New South Wales Giants potentially look off the pace. But again, it's what and how the lure of that competition is, and you can see a lot of New Zealanders within that. And so, you know, it's what does 2027 start to look like? And I would say that board is going to have to move super fast, because the contracting period, ANZ Premiership, I think, kicks off in a couple of weeks. That'll come around super quick. That'll be around June, beginning of June, they'll start to look at it. Well, we're in April. So they would need to have a broadcast deal done, an indication of how the finances are looking for next year pretty quickly. And they would have to, I think, they're going to have to reinvent the wheel and fast, or they're going to lose more players in 2027 to Australia. Now, remember, Australia have no restriction on overseas players. They will take in as many as they can, but they are also looking to extend their teams from 8 to 10. That would then therefore enable another 20 players to be incorporated into professional netball. So they do have the capacity, if they went to 10 teams, to again take in a few more international players. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they fold out. One competition is growing in revenue, playing numbers, crowd numbers, and player remuneration. The other is declining in all of those key markets.
Okay, on that, Lee, this is New Zealand netball. I'm going to say this right now. Some of our biggest sporting organisations have been absolutely, their performances have been absolutely appalling, but netball's probably been the top of them. I'm going to say this. Would moving the season so to accommodate, say, where New Zealanders can play in Australia or in England, and moving it to a shorter type season where it doesn't clash with that, could that save the competition?
I'm always reluctant to move something to accommodate something else.
But the realities are, Lee, that Australia is a better competition. We've got over 12 players, 12 to 20 players. We're probably going to get more going over, and unless we join in with Australia, which I can't see happening, Lee, and you're the netball expert here, but I, from an outsider looking at it, I can't see happening. Would it be better so that we could get, so in between competitions, you get the best players coming?
A little bit. I mean, I think with the A-League, we've seen that become a summer, you know, football's a traditional winter sport, become a summer sport so they can get some clear air away from, particularly in Australia, obviously, away from NRL, rugby and ASL. So I understand that. If it was me and I was running the cutter, I'd be probably looking for a couple of things. I would probably move New Zealand. If I could, I would keep the 6 New Zealand teams. Ideally, you want to have 8. But I just don't think there's the player depth to have 8. I would then have a top four New Zealand based competition where you went, okay, so you run them you run, if they had eight, we had eight, you run the competitions at exactly the same time, and then you drop into a super series where the top four from Australia, the top four from New Zealand playing, you know, a crossover, and they'd have to, you know, you could cram it in over a 3 or 4 week period, and you find the champion of Australasia. And I think that would add significant interest because all of those teams would be wanting to make that top four, or even at the moment, if you went for a top three, but they've got to do something. And Australia is the key here.
Yeah.
They've ruled out, to your point, they've ruled out going, okay, well, let's put a franchise in there. Unless, look, to me, and knowing a bit about the finances, the only franchises, maybe the Mystics and maybe the Steel, would be the only two with the financial backing to be able to go, okay, we could enter a team in there and financially make that work. But that would just destroy the New Zealand competition miles when I have it. So I get your point, but I, if it was me, I would be working with Australia and saying, how do we work together to create something that's at season end, good for New Zealand and good for Australia? Now, we've seen this in Super Rugby, haven't we? The moment we took out the South African teams because of COVID and they came out, I don't think that it's coincidence that they come out of Super Rugby and we started to struggle, as in we struggled against them. So I'm of the belief that same thing in netball. If we had more involvement with Australian netball on a more regular basis, we will get better. And I think it's the same with rugby. If we had, you know, Super Rugby's a wee bit boring, isn't it? You know, we're playing the same teams.
Oh, yeah.
You get down. I mean, as I said, Fiji, yep, that's a challenge. Moana Pacifica, you know, they're right off the pace this week, as seen by the thrashing they got from the Highlanders, who are hardly, you know, high flyers in the competition. So those two teams, probably towards the bottom. Then the poor old Highlanders have been a struggle street as well. One of the Australian, like the Western Force. I mean, the Western Force are good, again, in Perth, but away from Perth, not so much. They're competitive, but they don't win many games. Highlanders, probably the same. Competitive, don't win too many games. So you take four teams out of it, you're left with eight. You've only got to make six. You know, we've been there, done that a whole lot of times. And who would bet against the New Zealand team winning that competition in 2026? So again, same problem that rugby's got. You've got to look at it and say, is this a spectator sport? I'm of the view, we're off topic here, but it's that kind of show today, where they need some kind of evening out of the talent. And you see this with the NRL. You know, there's a lot of those teams that on their day, the bottom team can beat the top team, or at the very least, you know, out of that competition to make the eight, as the Warriors have found out, is massively tough. And so I think rugby, and we started this conversation with Neville, has to look and say, how do we create a competition that is meaningful? And even if it's meaningful at the end where the top four peel off and play someone else, I don't know. But what I do know is that traveling to South Africa, traveling to Argentina, even up to Japan, when Super Rugby was 15, 16 teams, was far, far greater for the game and held far more interest than what we have now. Same in netball, you know, two rounds, same teams playing each other. The tactics will be off the pace. When you look at the quality of the teams, I could probably call it shortly. You could definitely name your top sort of three or four.
I'm also going to say this, Super Rugby really dropped the ball. How come over Easter, it's kind of like the situation you had on the Gold Coast, why do we only play three games? I just don't get this. And the other thing too, Lee, I'm just going to get to, I was speaking to Pat McKendry earlier, the Chiefs are playing the Waratahs in Hamilton. Now, to me, this doesn't make sense. Why wouldn't you say move that game to somewhere like Tauranga, knowing it's an Easter weekend, knowing that there'll be a lot of people down there?
Yeah, 100%. And like, imagine if, for example, the Chiefs were playing the Hurricanes. Like, we don't help ourselves. We don't help ourselves, and we don't think logically. It's a bit like my conversation right at the beginning of this about the stupid rules on Good Friday. You know, like, if you were a religious person, being the good Irish Catholic that you are,
I didn't go to the pub yesterday, by the way.
No. Well, I would have, but I wasn't allowed, obviously. But you're then fine. That's no one's stopping anybody from their personal beliefs. But to have a situation where you've got gambling allowed in that pub, betting on racing, you've got pokies operating, you've got, you're allowed to serve beer, but only with a meal, in 2026, is just illogical. And
absolutely,
some of the decisions that our sports people make or our sports bodies make are the same thing. We don't look at it logically and go, what is best for the sport? And we can't get out of our own way, you know? And it's the same thing. I was talking about a situation in commercial this week, and I said, for the love of God, can we just get out of our own way and simplify what the hell we're talking about here? And it's the same in sport. I could go down to that pub, you know, any pub in New Zealand today, and there would be more sense of guys having a Spates or a Lion or a Steinlager talking about what should be good for the game than what we've been given at the moment. And I tell you what, if you went to a netball court, you'd get far more sense as well. And to your point, I think cricket and the disruptions we've had in that is one thing. I kind of understand that. I get that a guy like Scott Wenneck has gone. I don't think what you guys are proposing for the NZL 20 is good for the game, therefore I'm leaving. I totally stand by that. I see Dion Nash has also stood down. Those are guys making moral decisions on what they think is best for the game. Totally fair, you know, totally fair. Netball has, for want of a better term, pooed on itself. And so it's a lot of where they are at is of their own making. Even with New Zealand rugby, what you've seen is, you know, we've seen that change. They haven't appointed a CEO, but they've got an executive chair and David Kirk who's very much shaping that to his own want, which is why what he should be alongside the board. They put in a new coach, they're putting in some new processes, and they're shaping it for what they think is the betterment of the game. I'm still not sure what netball is doing. What are they trying to do? What is their end goal? Because to me, I see nothing. I don't see any commercial plan. I don't see any broadcast plan. I don't see any player retention plan. I don't see any domestic deliverable plan. I guess, what are we doing to deliver the game domestically? Where's the grassroots support? Like, all of that stuff, I don't see in netball. I was delighted to hear this week or last week, I can't remember, and I can't remember the guy's name, but he's on the New Zealand Rugby Union board. He's just been appointed, and he was talking about, we've got to get back to the grassroots of the game. And you and I both know this, mate, that we are suffering. We can't get coaches. We can't get players. There was an article a couple of weeks ago about not being able to field enough front rowers. In Dunedin, we have the equivalent of an under 85 grade. They call it Championship Colts. It's basically under 21, and it's for a lot of skinny players to play, if you like. It's not weighted because we don't have the big Polynesian population. There's 16 teams in it, and they're saying, well, yes, but you've got to have contestable scrums for 50% of the game. What? We've got 56 players in one team out of the Sharks, and we don't have a front row. Are you saying to 56 players you can't play on a Saturday because we can't field a front row? I mean, it's just ludicrous. This is where I go back to, if I told 20 people that and said, hey, should we have these guys playing or not because of this rule, 19 of them would say, just let them play. Just have non-contest and let them play.
Absolutely. Anyway,
you can't, and that's the end of it.
So
anyway, we've filled the time.
Yeah, you have actually, and you know, I don't even get a word on Edgeway or a decent insight. What are you up to apart from going to the beach and the pub today over the weekend?
Well, my lovely wife will probably drag me to the shops, which will be fine. My plan is to go to the beach, go to the pool, go to the shops, go to the pub, gamble recklessly.
Okay, on that note, we'll leave you later.
Amon will be back with the